Well, let's begin. The gang's all here. I'd like to call over the Johnson County Hospital Board meeting for October and would entertain a motion to approve the minutes of our meeting from September.
I make a motion we approve the minutes from September.
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Our minutes have been approved.
Our first two agenda items are not looking good.
Well,
let me make a phone call quick.
Our chief of staff is a busy person and may be joining us later. We'll move to the next item.
You're getting close. Okay. Sounds good. I said we'll see what you can do. Can you hear what you can do? No, 5:30. So, we'll see in a little bit.
Are we expecting someone from the construction project?
10 or 15 minutes late, so.
Okay. Well, let's start with leadership, and let's start with Mary Letzel, our director of nursing. And
nothing to add. Any questions? Quickest board meeting ever. That's what I was hoping for.
Hearing none. Thank you, Mary.
What's the call light? I'm sorry. Oh. What's the call light system?
For our new area where the nurse, where the patient calls the nurses. Call system. Yeah. We have it in our area, but it needs to go everywhere in the hospital, so there might be a little lag time on that. But
you push a button and instantly a nurse is
immediately
there to help
it's like
you.
A genie. It's like rubbing the lamp.
Well, Brenda, you came in wearing a mask. I know there's been some challenges next door.
Mm-hmm. We still have three residents that are in their rooms till Sunday. Two of them we struggle to keep in their rooms because they simply do not believe that they have COVID. I even tried to use that. Well, that's what your doctor said. Well, what doctor was that? So they're feeling pretty good. And we will be, if we don't have any more cases with staff, we'll be officially out of masks on November 4th. Something that's come up a few years ago, I think it was a government entity that coined the phrase patients before paperwork. Well, now what they have us doing in the nursing home, MPS is plus something called an optional state assessment. And optional means you don't have to do it if you don't want to get paid. And it's 77 pages for every resident every quarter. Done more than once if they get a little better or get a little worse. And so as of October 1st, that stuff all has to be transmitted. Well, between CPSI, Medicaid, Department of Health, and CMS, nobody knows why ours aren't transmitting or what the repercussions will be or what the penalties could be. And they're all kind of pointing fingers at each other. And but that's something that's a real issue that needs to be resolved. And that's all tied to reimbursement.
MDS by CMS?
Yes. Yes.
And I know what CMS is, but
minimum data set is MDS.
Oh. Mm-hmm. So it's now paperwork before patient care.
I think it has been for some time. Mm-hmm. And it's doing, when they try to submit the information in a certain way, it just wipes it all out, and they have to redo it, and it's not going anywhere. It's not going where it needs to for some reason. And the computer system, CPSI, says talk to CMS. CMS says it isn't us, so we're in the middle of a... Russ is trying to help us with it, with IT.
Well, that sounds kind of rough. And yeah. You're short-staffed because
other than
of
that,
COVID.
We have enough nurses. We don't have enough CNAs. And in addition to COVID, we don't have enough CNAs. And also, I'm trying to deal with attendance issues, which I need to do, which could affect our CNA staffing for the...
But I saw from the report one traveler this time.
Right, but we're actually trying to get a few more.
Not quite enough.
No, the difference being from last time when travelers were tough to get, we had to sign contracts with them, and if they wanted 12-hour shifts, if they wanted every other weekend, we were kind of at their mercy. This time I'm saying we absolutely need to have flexibility so we can have people when we need them and don't have excess staff when we don't need them. What a downer.
So over the years, has your job gotten harder? Or
it has changed a lot.
The same.
If only I would have known 30 years ago that these were the good old days, I would have appreciated it more.
I get that. Well, thanks for all that you do and trying to keep the ship sailing. Any questions for Brenda at Amy Holt? Lori, what can you tell us, or do you want to tell us anything?
No, I don't want to tell you anything. Let me think. We asked Russ if he'd like to be the manager of IT, and he accepted, thank goodness, because he's really the only one in the building that knows IT really well. So he'll sort of, he'll be able to manage, like, the IT department and sort of over our contracted staff if there's something that goes wrong or something with that. So he's got some learning to do, but I think he's excited about it. And then Anna Carlson started today for director of operations, so we're excited about that. I don't know if she is, but we are.
We're excited to be through the online modules.
Well, welcome, and I hope it's a good transition. Your husband seems to be jumping right in and staying
busy.
Well,
he's out hunting right now, so.
Well, that's sort of a good thing, too.
Okay, he likes it so far, so.
Well, did you want to say anything to the folks here tonight?
Just excited to be here. For those of you that don't know me, my name's Anna Carlson. Zach Carlson, who just started as a physician here, is my husband. So we're excited to embed ourselves in Buffalo and try to help the community as best we can. We've been coming to Buffalo on and off for the last 3 years, so it was a very educated decision to try to come here, and we're excited for the future. So
he grew up in a little town in Minnesota, and you grew up in a larger town?
Yeah, I grew up about an hour northwest of Minneapolis. And Zach grew up in a town called Shevlin, Minnesota, which is 167 people. So if you know where, like, the headwaters of Mississippi, Itasca State Park, he's 20 minutes from there. That's where he grew up. So.
Well, welcome. You've disguised your Minnesota accent very well.
Thank you.
So you like this weather outside, huh?
No. But I'm used to it, and I'm well prepared for it, if that's anything.
People up here and don't like it as much either. We did lose 2 dietary aides also because of COVID in the care center. Can't do the mask, so I worry a little bit about what happens when we all have to mask again. Where they were already in a crunch because they lost, I mean, people were out with COVID, and then they just said, well, I'm not working with the mask. They didn't come to work.
One really good one that just said, I just can't breathe.
Yeah, they
you get
both.
Used to it.
Yeah, you get used to it. But you loser.
Well, I had a observation and a question, I guess, about our last HCAP scores.
I'm back. Thank you.
It looked like there was a trend where the scores were lower in discharge planning, communications, and I have a hypothesis that when the census is up and it's harder to get everything done during the day, those things don't get as much time, and I don't know if that's accurate or if we have any more information on that.
Well, we're working with that with
the state thing.
The state thing, you know, to on ECAPs, and a lot of that is to do with discharge planning and stuff we can do to discharge plan. So we're hoping that that'll help. When we get in the new part, they're going to have whiteboards that has a lot of that information in there, that has a lot of that information on there that's on the HCAPS.
And about discharge planning.
And then we're doing that custom learning solutions thing. And so we're hoping that that'll inspire the staff.
Is that what the flyer is
addressing?
So it strategically improves patient experience, physician provider engagement, employee satisfaction, well, work in progress.
Yeah, and then some of those, there's, by the time we get them, they're at least 3 months or longer behind, and we don't know who did them, so, you know, if they would actually tell you what the problem was, it'd be easier if this, but it's hard to do. But hopefully this will help this ignite.
Any other questions for Lori?
Well, I was curious in the HCAP stuff, and I've never noticed this before. I was just curious, how do you define a near miss?
Oh, a near miss?
Yeah, what's a near miss?
Oh, you mean, a near miss is something that you catch before it actually reaches a patient. If you drew up a drug and it was a wrong drug and you realized it before you gave it to the patient. Or if you did something but you didn't realize it, you know, anything, it could be anything. You know, you didn't put a strap around them when you were transferring them or whatever, but you realized it before you stood them up. And so it doesn't affect the patient or the resident at a time.
But it could.
It could have. If you would have did it, it would have.
Right. But that's an actual reportable event, huh?
And, you know, we don't get very many of them because most people don't think about it. But once in a while,
they don't think about it, and sometimes they maybe don't even know.
So I found a couple of comments that explain. Mm-hmm. You saw those.
Yeah, that's why I was asking. Because I've never seen the near miss category.
Yeah.
That's rare, probably.
Yeah.
It
doesn't happen very often.
Well, thank you for the update. I noticed the clinic has been increased by about 90 visits compared to this time a year ago. And they've had some good turnouts for flu clinics and the breast health night that seem to be well orchestrated and well attended. I didn't get invited, but I heard it turned out well. So I guess we're still waiting on item number 2 and 3. Let's go to leadership CEO report. You ready?
Yeah. I'll just kind of jump off that Ignite the Patient Experience stuff. I think Melissa got invites out for the board. I'm really excited about it. We had discussions a couple months ago. This is the program that actually got a grant from the Wyoming Department of Health for these guys to come out. It's about a $5,000 program. But just in talking to Brian, the CEO of this organization, he's going to be one of the presenters that comes out. Really excited about kind of the tools and the resources that they have to kind of bring to us. And just really that kind of progressive approach that they take in challenging health systems on being a better version of themselves. And so I think they come with a lot of pre-built tools for processes that we can adopt and absorb. And so kind of the structure of that layout on the 7th, they're really going to kind of be doing some exploring, meet with frontline staff, meet with leadership, meet with managers, and so kind of getting a good feel across the organization for what our culture is, you know, how we tick. And then the next day from 8 to 12, they do that Ignite the Patient Experience. And I've heard Brian speak a couple times, and he really is passionate about about what he does and helping organizations, you know, get to the next step of who they can be as organizations. We were going through our HCAP stuff in a meeting we had, was it Monday? Melissa, we met with him. And his challenge is like, you know, looking, everything I'm seeing, looking at your HCAPs, you guys are probably a 3-star. What would it mean to you guys to be a 5-star facility? Like what, you know, what would that motivate you to strive for? What would that mean for your patients and residents, for your staff and the pride that they served in? Come knowing that's the type of organization they work for. So, you know, I'm really excited to get him out here and just kind of, you know, get the team in front of him and see where it takes us. Their goal is in 2 weeks that they'll have a 3-year game plan for how we can improve the patient experience delivered to us, kind of with, you know, a step-by-step process for what we should be looking at implementing and things like that. So I'm pretty excited. They also have another thing that they do as an organization that they partner with the state on in looking at staff retention and improving the culture. And so they worked with 5 hospitals earlier this year over the last 12 months on this and had so much success, and the state's so excited. And it sounds like they might be doing another round of funding for that. So I talked to Brian about you know, kind of keeping us in the loop that we'd be interested in and what that would look like. And not all of it's overly complex, but I think some of it really is meaningful in building a culture of, you know, how you onboard people to make them really feel valuable, you know, and wanting to stay. And I think if you can really leave a good mark in the first 3 months people are here, you can build lifelong employees. But sometimes I feel like we're so busy that it's hard for us to do some of those things well. So, thanks, Lord. So, and I could pause there, kind of end of that piece, and I can take off after.
Okay.
We jumped up. We want to jump back to item 3.
Item 3, approval of phase 3 construction pricing, which is the final phase in the massive facility-wide construction. And would you like to take it from there?
Yeah, sure. Sorry.
That's all right. Miscommunication on the start.
On that contractor time.
So you're Mr. Odell, but I forgot your first name.
I'm Will.
Will. Okay. Well, thanks for coming down. You've probably been here a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been in this facility a time or two.
I don't know if all of you have met Will, but Will took over right about when we did the pricing, I think, for the phase 2 construction. And so he's kind of been the spearhead for Odell Construction for the last year and a half, probably. So what'd you say? About a year and a half?
Yeah, I came on right around. Midway through phase one. So, but we'll just jump right into it. Phase 3, so we had over 3 weeks to put this together. Came in a little higher than expected because we were getting numbers rolling in. Thought it was going to come down 4, and then the last couple days we got some pretty big numbers. So most of that's the mechanical electrical funding pricing. That makes up about 50% of the total bid, that with fire sprinkler. But I'll just run through each individual line item. General conditions, so that's 313, so that's got a little bit of overhead, and then temporary facilities for my guys, equipment, dust control, punch list items, things like that. Existing conditions, so that's the demolition. So it's pretty heavy in this phase. It's mostly remodel. We have asbestos abatement. Talking to our plumber, he's got a load of work down in the basement, and a lot of that asbestos abatement will be the plumbing insulation. And that we put $50,000 in for that, and kind of figure while he's here, he can get rid of some of the things that we might not necessarily be modifying and demoing right now, but he can get rid of the asbestos on other lines that are going to remain intact. Concrete, so there's minimal for that. That's just to move some plumbing and electrical conduit. So a little bit of trenching in the building, and then we'll re-pour that. Masonry, so that includes a little bit of brick patch, and then there's a wall on the east side of the building. We're replacing the wall with windows. And in the bid, it just has EFIS and stucco patch. But we had Thompson Price just redoing that whole wall because it's kind of difficult to patch EFIS, so it includes that. Metal, so that would be your structural steel, a little bit of structural framing. There's a few existing columns we got to move, and then a few new ones we got to throw in for the remodel. Woods and plastics, that's pretty minimal, just some fire blocking and things like that. Roofing, so we're going to, after this phase, we would have re-roofed about 90% of the whole facility, leaving a small section that was roofed just 10, 15 years ago. So you guys will have to more or less complete the new roof. Doors, so there's a, that includes like all the doors for the patient rooms, and there's a few new corridor doors going in. Corridor, I think it's D-35, it's just east of the new inpatient wing.
It's our main corridor going from the, down through our world. Inpatient spaces for the nurse station.
Windows, glazing, like there's about 20 units going in for that facility. Most of those are exterior, but there's some interior windows as well for that. Framing, so a lot of the walls that were taken out, we're basically turning a lot of space into shell, and then we're coming back and framing our new walls for the MEP to sit in. Those will get new drywall and paint finish. The grid ceilings, so it's the whole corridor that we were just talking about, all the remodel areas. So the whole corridor that runs along the ICU, that's going to get new grid ceiling, which that was originally placed in phase one, but logistically just kind of looked better to do it now. I don't know if for you guys there's really a good time to do it, but I think it's necessary. And while we're up there, we're going to do a lot of demolition of old mechanical and electrical and plumbing equipment, clean some of that up. There's a lot of stuff that's been abandoned up there, so that'll be a part of that as well.
With the new like height we have ceiling wise, you know, there's a lot of space for, you know, future work to be done or things like that. But when you go back with all the stuff that's been abandoned already, there's just no room to really add anything to that corridor. And so with doing the demo, thought this would be a good time of really cleaning that up. I mean, like Will said, there's never a good time for us, but if we ever have to, you know, do anything in the future, there's not going to be a better time to go tear all that old stuff out, especially if you go put additional new stuff in now. It's just going to make that harder in the future. So
right. We will be replacing a lot of that with new equipment, new plumbing and electrical conduit lines, and then HVAC ducting, but I think there'll be space remaining for future data runs and future electrical runs and things like that. Flooring and tile, so that's pretty self-explanatory. Basically just revamp all the remodel areas, kind of get more cohesive finishes throughout the whole facility, so more of what we've been seeing over inpatient and what's going to be going in clinic and physical therapy wing. Division plans, so that's just your bath accessories and fire extinguisher, cabinets, and FRPs and certain wall finishes, things like that. That's pretty minimal in this project. Wall protection, so that would be kind of the railing that you see here. We've been installing a composite, other additions we've done in the remodel areas, as well as the clinic and PT. So it'll be what we put in the new phase will match that. Furnishing, so that was pretty minimal. That would be curtains for the patient rooms. I think that was about it that we had for furnishings for this phase. Roller shades, so those will match the ones that we put in inpatient. There's something like going into physical therapy. Casework, so that was a big one. That's $300,000. There's around 240 new pieces on this remodel. Some of the rooms have a couple dozen cabinets, so that'll be good to replace some of the old outdated cabinetry in this facility. And then fire suppression, I'll skip over Hugs for now. Fire suppression, HVAC, electrical, and plumbing. So I said earlier that made up about 50%, just a little more than 50% of this proposal. HVAC, that includes new duct for the whole south side of the existing hospital. So we're going to upgrade that HVAC system. And then we do have an alternate in there to replace the last remaining air handler on the ceiling or on the roof. That would be alternate three. So that would come with HVAC if that's accepted. Electrical, removing a few panels. So that's pretty expensive. And then they have a lot of demo in order to relocate panels and bring other panels online. They got to demo a lot of existing. So electrical actually ended up being about 17% of the entire proposal, which is kind of in line with the other phases we've done so far. And then plumbing, once again, it's just upgrades. They have the most work out of anyone in the basement. Rerouting. There's a little bit of gas line that gets rerouted. It's mostly water. Just getting it to different areas of the hospital and rerouting it. And then we threw in the HUG security system, which I don't know if you guys know. Do they know what that is?
I think we can talk about that real quick. So the HUG system, it's a baby kind of tracking system. And fortunately, we have never had issues for that, but it's really become kind of best or standard of care across healthcare facilities. Babies, when they're born, get put onto a tracker, and then it actually closes down doors if somebody would try to be taken, or somebody would try to take a baby. And since I've been here, we've never had it happen, but it happened twice when we were in Alliance, where Child Protective Services notified the mother they'd be taking the child from the hospital. So we had to go into heightened state of security and things like that in case a grandparent or somebody would decide that they were not comfortable with that and try to take the matter into their own hands. And so, I think you never know what could happen. I think at some point we have to, plan for what could happen and eliminate some, the risk to us is far greater, I think, than saying we talked about it, but decided to do nothing about it. So. But it is an expensive line item for sure. It's a lot more than I expected when we started talking.
Maybe we can use it on our wandering
patients.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Might as well put it to work.
Exactly.
Part of it has to do with, I think, overall cost has to do with, we've had times where we've had to use overflow rooms, and so the HUG system really has to cover a lot of doors just if we have somebody in one of our new inpatient rooms. The hall, there's now two hallways and a lot of kind of ways people can escape, and so there's some additional doors that are put in to make the system work appropriately.
Yeah, that I think it ended up on 7 or 8 doors. Eighth door being a new door that we're putting in, but we'll be able to piggyback on existing access control entry, key card entry doors. We'll be able to piggyback off of that. So it should be pretty smooth. And we just got our bond permit and CMR, and then you we've added a $100,000 contingency to this phase. We've kind of been mulling over the contingency from previous projects into the next and so forth. So we have some contingency left over from the previous. So that'll just be a, another sum added to that total for any changes or issues with demolition we run into with the remodel. So that brings the total we're sitting at is $4.9 million. We were talking about the master budget earlier today. I think we had $19 million for all three phases, and with the 4.9 for this phase, and combining that with phase two and phase one, we're sitting at about 19.5. So we're running around 500,000 over budget for the master plan. That's with re-roofing basically the whole facility and a couple other add-ons that weren't originally a part of the master plan. So
let's rehash what areas phase three applies to.
Yeah, I think that's good. Yeah, so phase three will do the home health hospice area, or the hospice rooms currently. So there's three rooms down there right now. It'll convert over to two. It also shells out that cell nurse station for conferencing space, particularly looking at putting that Senior Life Solutions program down there in that space. Then it goes over and does the OB, so the two OB rooms in the nurse station that's back there. And then as well as the current ICU rooms in that nurse station area. So where the three ICU rooms, it'll turn into two. We're going to shell up some space for future PACU expansion. We could potentially get a third room in there. We decided to go that route, but the PACU is really kind of on an island, and so if we would really grow surgery, it gives us the opportunity to add additional PACU space. And then that main corridor hallway, just getting all of that to tie out. So that's kind of it from a patient care standpoint. There's some add-ons, you know, there's before you get all the way down to the South Nurse Station, we have several rooms staff, our nurse staff break room is there, so the staff break room gets enlarged a little bit. We'll also gain three offices and some storage space down in that part of the building, as well as I think the pantry ends up
pantry.
The pantry, and then there's the spa,
the tub room.
Yeah, the tub room, and then there's going to be kind of an activities room down there that's going to really be a kind of a family room, which I think especially for swing bed and intermediate swing bed patients that we have, gives them kind of a true living room. We'll have a kind of dining room table set up in there so families can play games or things like that, you know, so I think it's a pretty good use of that shelved space to, you know, provide some options for people that may have families here for a long time, so.
And then upgrading the old hospital.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then the other thing it does is in the clinic, where we have our current lobby and our waiting room and reception and all those offices kind of that sit back behind there, that gets upgraded to additional provider offices. And I think we pick up 5 exam rooms back in that space. So, and then as well as an additional procedure room kind of in the back of the clinic. So that's all that's what's included. You know, a lot of just kind of getting everything that's really in that old dated back up to consistent finishes throughout.
Complete stuff for the nursery area too.
Yep.
The labor and delivery rooms. And then back to the alternates, another thing that's included is clinic finishes. So kind of closer to the remodel area, it's more just admin. There's a few doctor's offices back there. One of the alternates is to go in there and bring those finishes up to date and make it cohesive with the rest of the remodel areas, which that's one of the newer parts of the hospital. But That's why this is an offer to just redo those finishes and just kind of make everything.
Yeah, so kind of where our main figure eight corridor in the clinic is, so our new addition in the back side of the clinic will get upgraded. So just some flooring and paint, essentially, doing some ceiling tile, you know, upgrades and some lighting to kind of have a more cohesive flow. It doesn't, I don't believe, touch updating cabinetry or some of those kind of things, but just trying to make it so we have a little bit more cohesion going through that space.
And author minutes one and two. So one in the OR area, those VAVs that would give each individual room climate control. And same goes for the clinic area. And I mentioned earlier the air handler above the clinic area that feeds those areas. That would get replaced. And then once again, those rooms would have individual climate control with those VAVs.
So I've gotten bit of an education on HVAC through this process a little bit. So, and I didn't know this, but air comes through the system at like 55 degrees, and then when it hits those heating units, it allows for control over that zone, essentially. We do have some issues right now because OB and our OR are on the same zone, and so we just had issues where we had a delivery, so we had a baby in the room, but the central sterile means their temperature is a lot lower so they can have proper cooling time to avoid, you know, mold forming or anything, you know, some infection control issues for sterile equipment. With the current upgrade, without doing the bid alternate, I've been ensured that the OB will be taken off onto a separate unit, so they'll be able to heat that area separate from the OR, so it should at least eliminate the urgency of doing something there, because if it wasn't for that, I'd say we hands down we have to do that one. It's a safety and patient care issue, but I do think it's something we, you know, should keep on our radar just to make sure that ORs are pretty finicky, and you know, we don't want to have, you know, bad outcomes or infection issues or things like that coming out of our OR. So, but in talking to Ace, who did the mechanical design, I was told that with the work done in OB, that those rooms would be on their own unit, and so they'll be able to heat separately from the OR without doing the bid alternate now. So. And then some of it's just really upgrading some old infrastructure, getting things on a more consistent platform for controls and things like that. So, which is why we asked for a lot of that stuff kind of in a bit alternative, kind of phased approach.
So when this is going on, is the long hallway that we currently use going to be cordoned off so that the overhead things and adjacent old rooms are redone? Are we going to be primarily using the new hospital hallway to get from one end to the other?
So right now our plan is to, there's a small, I think it's about 20-foot section of hallway right when you, if you're over by the where the elevator is, by the new PT addition, if you come into the existing hospital right there, plan is to jump on a small 20-foot section hallway there that runs by the new inpatient corridor to get that redone and remodeled. And then we have that inpatient corridor that we can use. And then we'll move around to where the nurse station is over there and then come back towards this part of the hospital until you meet the intersection and kind of go down to the links there. So we would shut that part of the corridor down and remodel those spaces and the rooms that are run adjacent to that. And then when that's completed, we would jump to the rest of the hallway. So you would have access to the new parts of the hospital and to the old. You should be able to access every different department at out during all phases through construction.
There'll be some zigzagging, but
yeah,
that was the intent of kicking the hallway into phase three, was we actually had some way of getting from one side of the building to the next with the secondary hallways.
What do you think of that, Mary?
Well, I think it'll be nice not to use the brand new hallway for everybody, because I really thought that's what we were going to do at one time, was to use it for full traffic. So it'll be nice not to have to use it all the time for full traffic. It'll be a lot of zigzagging around, but we'll put arrows up on the floor. Because we were going to use, I think, the new corridor.
Yeah, we'll still probably have to use it quite a bit, because that'll be about the zigzag over, but
phases
sections
go,
open
right.
up and things like that.
It's not, won't be as much as I thought it would be.
What's the possibility that the asbestos abatement turns into a massive overrun, just because I've heard it can become a big headache sometimes?
If we were having to take down partitions and walls downstairs, I would be worried about it. But knowing that that we're mainly just touching plumbing lines, that they have their insulation around their pipe elbows, that used to be all asbestos. So that's really the only concern. But I know there's a lot of pipe down there, so I'm really, as long as you don't, as we're not disturbing the other stuff, some of the wall finishes that might contain asbestos, I don't think we'll run into a situation like that.
What about the flooring in the old purpose? Does some of that have asbestos in it?
Yeah, there's a good chance that it has it's an old mastic that they used to use. It's their adhesive, that's asbestos, and there's a couple solutions for that. One would be the abatement. Two would be they make primers so that you can put new flooring over that without disturbing it. The drawback of that is that if you do remodels in the future, it may become a problem if someone starts to demo up that floor and then you're in a situation where you have to demo the rest. That you run into that issue if you don't just agree there right now. But there is a possibility we could just go over the existing flooring.
Well, I think they've gone over it once already.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Like the corridor?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
They've already gone over it once, so.
I'd have to look at that. There's a chance we can get the newer flooring up without disturbing the wall. Depending on what the adhesive is they use. I don't think you want to go over it again.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it builds it up besides.
I think the corridor flooring was included in this abatement number. I'm not sure about any other any rooms that are adjacent to the corridor.
Well, I know when they tore down the nursing home, they thought that there was a lot more asbestos than there was, and there wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, they were surprised about the amount that there was, because they really thought a lot of it was, and it wasn't. But that was built several years later, so for a lot of it was.
Yeah, I know we do have an asbestos report. We have a couple of them from this facility, so I can review that and see if that area has a hot flooring or plumbing or whatever.
So, Luke, as far as the numbers go, so I think Will said if we do this 4.9 as presented here, we would be, in the whole grand scheme of things, from 1, 2, and 3, like $500,000 over budget, which is really kind of not fair to say over budget, because it sounds like we did a couple add-ons in there, you know. But if we did alternative 1, 2, 3, and 4, you know, you do the math there, then we're at, that's another 600, you know, 700 and some thousand. So we'd be, you know, whatever that math is, you know, 1,200, 1.2 million over budget. Do we have the capacity to do this? Because I can't remember all the numbers and all the time. I mean,
yeah,
our borrowing facility is $9 million, and then we were going to put in our own cash, and then at that time, we were applying for grants, which we didn't know yet, but I think we did get some.
We did get 1.6.
Go ahead.
I'll just kind of explain where we're at right now. So the original plan was the hospital is going to kick in about $7 million. The foundation was going to do 3, and then we got the 9 for to get us to that 19. And I think with that 19 number, I felt comfortable. That included the, you know, adding the basement on, moving therapy, the additional re-roofs. There, I think, was some transformer. I think it's additional transformer work. I think that might have been before you came on. That was before I got here. So there was, you know, quite a bit of a couple million, $2-3 million of add-ons that I think were done when we got to phase 2. So the 19 that I thought we'd have some comfort in coming under that 19 when we approve phase 2 going into phase 3. So this number's obviously bigger than I had kind of expected it being when Will and I first started talking about it at the end of last week. But as far as capacity, the hospital's now kicked in about $10 million. We've used about 3.5, I think, we've drawn from the loan. So, I mean, with the hospital's 10, we're about 19 without the foundation contributing anything right now. Now, if you look at our days cash on hand, and Tim and I have had this conversation probably every time we meet, need to get that days cash on hand number up, because we never intended on dropping down as low as we have.
We still have about
1.8 in grants that we haven't received the cash for that. Yeah. So I think if we see that as our means of making ourselves whole from a cash flow standpoint back to the hospital and not touching the foundation, I think we're comfortable doing, at the very least, doing the phase 3 project with kind of where we sit today. The bid alternatives, I think there's some of those that, you know, we could debate on the importance of all of those. The clinic VAVs, would be one that, if we were going to pull one out, I don't think, I mean, we'll have everyone on site now, but I guess we'd probably have to talk to the staff that works down in the clinic more so on how big of an issue is. I've never had complaints on the heating or heating issues down in the clinic, the intent there was that would be kind of the last upgrade to get everything to a new pneumatic system for our VAVs. So that was kind of a ACE recommendation that if we were looking at some bid alternatives, why not throw that in for a bid alternative? I do know upgrading the unit on the roof for the clinic, I think, is a bigger sense of importance from our maintenance team, and I think that's maybe been sunset and it's hard to get parts for. So there's potential that we have to do that one fairly soon anyway. And kind of same thing with the OR. Like we talked about, I think there's definitely issues that we've needed to address. I think what's in the main bid solves that issue for the most part, but we do have these old units out there that at some point we will have to go back and upgrade. So, and I don't know if I have a great feel on how long they can continue to go as is, or if we can buy ourselves 5 years by getting that down the road, or where we sit with that. So.
Another thing I might add is, we talked about this earlier. We're not really in a huge rush logistically to start this next phase. We got to wrap up a little bit of phase 2 before we can jump on it. And so we have some time to take a deeper look into the plans and not necessarily get down to that $19 million. But I think we could meet with all the departments and maybe get rid of a few things that might save us some money.
That's what I would kind of recommend, and Will and I talked about that earlier this afternoon, about trying to get the architects and engineers back out here and see what we can value engineer to get this number more in line with where we've been. or where we want it to be in the long run. So.
So tonight we're not finalizing.
I think the one thing we just to be able to get things moving would be, and what you say was the long lead items, is really the mechanical.
I think that, yeah, it'd be the HVAC and then electrical. That potentially is long lead. I know they got gear over on the south side of the hospital. It's probably several months, not 6 months out.
That doesn't seem like something we have to delay. I don't really think the HVAC over the clinic is an option. It seems like it ought to be happening when you're doing a major project there and its time has come.
Yeah, that would be the only alternate here on the list that has some urgency to it with the longer lead times for that.
Yeah, I remember that was an issue when we started. They have come a long way, and they're big, and it's...
They don't make them for you until you pay for a check for it, either.
So. Yeah, well,
it's gotten better, but it's, like, it's 8 months to 12 months still. At that time, it was like 18 months.
Well... I mean, the sense that I get is that these alternates on the bottom are probably a good idea if we're not in a financial situation that we're not flexible. I don't know how other board members feel, but they don't seem like luxuries. Perhaps the individual climate controls are a little bit in that area, but that's a fairly small portion of this whole list.
Yeah, that's kind of my sense too, but then I was going to ask, you kind of alluded to it, it was like maybe from a timing standpoint, we don't need to address the alternates, or maybe just the one for order, you know, the HVAC or the rooftop unit. I don't know, but I guess the concern would be is like we get into this and there are some huge overruns and some of these more important ones, and then we're sitting here holding the bag, so to speak, we're $2.5-3 million short at the end of this deal. So, but maybe we do have time. Do we have time before you have to decide on ultimate 1, 2, 3, and 4 or no?
Well,
or like you said, maybe we sharpen our pencils a little bit and just vote to move ahead on the essentials or something? Or,
I think
one kind of caveat of the VADs during the remodel would be the time to tackle that. Have the ceilings opened up and all that, be easy access and probably more favorable pricing to do it now.
Well, I used to live there, and I remember times when the weather changed, like today. You noticed some climate issues. One area was noticeably warmer or colder, and it could be a matter of 50 or 80 feet down a hallway, and I always thought it was just a very sprawling kind of piecemeal environment that would be challenging to control climate-wise, and that was par for the course. But maybe if that's a matter of upgrades, that's going to improve the employee environment quality substantially. Some people are pretty sensitive to climate.
Yeah, that's very true. The one thing, Tom, is so with these contracts, we get a guaranteed maximum price from Odell on the project. So we wouldn't get into it and all of a sudden, unless we went and did a change order, have a big price increase, you know, end up with $500,000 more, things like that. Those are things that we can, you know, help do. I do think, though, with phase two, we pulled $130,000 out of that with, you know, and did something similar in phase one. So You know, I think there's opportunity for us to go back and try to sharpen our pencils and try to get to a number that's a little bit more favorable, kind of across the board, and working with the team. But I think that comes down to where you guys really want that number to be if we're comfortable going above the 19, where do we want to see that come in at, you know? Because we can sharpen our pencil some and pull some things off, but, I mean, adding on to it's going to be harder to, you know, scale that back up.
Well, I don't want to speak for the foundation, because that's a board that decides as a group, but they're currently holding $11 million to support the hospital and intended to contribute a portion of that to this. And so there may be quite a bit of flexibility there if we want this to be a first-rate structure. It would seem like we're not in the mood to skimp when you've got that kind of resource to support finishing everything.
And, you know, essentially a commitment from them at the start of the project for $2 or $3 million. So, you know, which if, you know, if we don't scale anything back and you add that all up, we're $1 million over, which is far under where the foundation talked about being. So then anything we can go help scale back would be, you know, and it would help with that effort.
Well, any other questions for Will regarding phase three pricing? If you don't mind, it would be helpful to get a little bit of a update on how things are going with one and two.
So phase one, we're at the finish line for the inpatient bath remodels. We're kind of finishing those bathrooms. Hit a couple snags. We're kind of unsure of how everything was going to come together with the change to the wall finish in there. But this coming week, we should have those wrapped up. And then it's just a matter of getting our cleaners back in there. And then you guys can start in there.
The bathrooms look really good. I mean, it's been a long wait, but they do look really good. There was several discussions on maybe some compromises here and there, and I'm glad we did, because I think what we're getting is drastically better than what we had talked about trying to get. So.
I would agree with that. And the state, the HLS will be here tomorrow, and he can do another final inspection on that, and hopefully he won't have to make a return trip after that. Wrapping up those finishes with the floor tile in there, and then we should be good to go for the inpatient. You guys should be able to start moving staff and furniture, and eventually patients in there. Phase two, so clinic, they're at the point now where we have a little bit of ceiling grid to finish up, and that should be done this week, and then flooring and tile guys are over there. And after that, it's just a matter of getting the rest of the flooring laid. Painters will have to make a second trip in there, but I'm hoping to be done at the clinic in the early part of December, mid-December. And then PT will follow suit a couple weeks behind that, so we get those finishes wrapped up. We do have a couple entrances where we, or storefront entrances, those got delayed, so those should be showing up. They were ordered last week, so mid-December for those. So first of the year, mid-January, those will be able to turn over.
And they're turning out really good. I mean, walking through the clinic and the therapy gym, I think the community is going to be very receptive to how those are turning out. So, especially for an access standpoint, the new clinic I think is going to be be a huge upgrade. And then walking in the therapy gym, it's pretty impressive.
That's great.
And just the ease of getting into the buildings for both of those locations is going to be drastically improved from what we've been in the past.
Well, a lot of people are going to be happy with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they will be.
Yeah. It's one of our biggest complaints. Mm-hmm. You know, it's parking and access issues. So.
Any other questions for Mr. O'Dell? Appreciate your time.
Are you guys comfortable at least approving us able to move forward with the long lead time items? It's hard without kind of a line item for what those pieces are, but I think we could set kind of a budget for that. And then I guess, you know, the clinic unit, if that's something we wanted to include in that, or if that's something you guys want to wait and see where the pricing for that comes back on and do that bid alternative next month.
Well, it's unlikely we're going to be presented with a higher figure at our next meeting. There may be a few minor reductions, but I don't expect we're going to see any big change in what we've got here now.
Yeah. Just want to get, like, if we have a 12-month wait time on something, want to a month can make a difference on our ability to get into that space and things like that too. So. But if you'd prefer to wait, we can do that as well. But I think if you approved those long lead time items for $1.5 million. And then we can do a final approval for the rest of phase two next month. That work for everybody.
I'm good with that.
Yeah.
Alicia, are you still with us?
I am. I'm just having a harder time hearing, but I'm still here.
And you don't have numbers to look at?
Oh, Melissa sent me a text of it, so I got to see it all.
Okay.
Thank you.
Just move to approve the whole budget, Alicia.
Well, I don't think we want to delay getting essential equipment.
Yeah, we did a similar thing in phase one.
Yeah.
With equipment material and HVAC equipment.
I think we did it with phase two, actually, as well. And had approved the budget for those long wait time items before we actually approved the whole budget.
Well, it might be efficient to have a motion to approve long lead time items tonight, at least to get that process formally started.
I think just the big clarification is, do we want to include that clinic unit in that or not? Will thinks the 1.5 would probably get us there.
HVAC on that base is under 700, so I'm getting the electrical here as well.
But want to make sure that $300,000 that we have, you know, you guys are okay with that number before we actually order it. So.
Yeah, I'll make that motion and we move ahead with approval of the long lead time items central for the project, you know, up to whatever number you just said, 1.5, 1.8, whatever that number is, and we'll figure out the rest down the line here.
Do you want to include alternate?
I would include alternate number 3, yeah.
I
second
it.
Oh. What's that, Alicia?
I was going to second that.
Thanks for offering. It's been moved and seconded to approve the long lead time items for phase 3 up to approximately $1.5 million. Any further discussion? Those in favor say aye.
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 And those opposed? That motion does pass. All right, well, appreciate your time and
Thank you, guys.
Very detailed report and stuff.
Let's just touch base in the morning on that. Thank you.
Well, I think we were in the midst of our CEO report, and we took a pause right after discussing the Ignite conference.
Yeah. Lori introduced Anna, but really excited to have Anna here. She's worked in several different kind of health systems from back in Minnesota and up in Montana for the last 4 years. So, you know, I think she's going to be a great addition to the team and the future of what we're going to be doing here. So we're still looking for a CFO and a clinic manager. We've had several applicants come through and just haven't quite found the right fit yet. So we're still in the hunt for that. Earlier this month, we had Meditech come out, which is a new EMR, electronic medical record system. One of the things that, you know, it's something that I'm sure, I think the board's had a lot of discussion, Rich, maybe before you joined, on the kind of broken medical record system we have now. Our clinic has one, our lab has one, our hospital has one. They don't talk very well, and it does create some issues. I was looking at the stock of CPSI, who's our hospital vendor as well, and they have lost a lot of market share, and their stock has dropped by more than 50% in the last year and a half. So I do have some concerns on overall viability and how long they're going to be able to continue to be viable, or not they're going to sell out, or, you know, their product's so dated, I actually would be a little bit surprised if somebody would come in and buy that product up. So it's, you know, something that's really kind of been on our radar with all the constructions. We've kind of delayed really looking at that. I think in the past we've looked at Cerner. We had some Epic demos here probably 6 months ago, something like that, and looked, you know, started getting pricing back. The hard part with both Cerner and Epic is there's a $2 to $3 million cost involved with kind of getting your foot in the door. One of the advantages with Meditech is, and we're still working on getting pricing back from them, so I don't have pricing to really discuss, but they don't have that implementation fee for that upfront, you know, initial investment. And so we're working on getting pricing. We've had a couple debriefs with staff over the last 2 weeks, and the reviews have been pretty positive. I think everybody's sees the broken system we have and how much manual effort goes into maintaining what we have going on and just how dated our system is. We've talked with the care center, and they, you know, they think they can probably drop an FTE just in how much work is kind of being manually entered and how much the system's not working for us. And, you know, I think we would kind of see that maybe in other places around the building as well, or just projects we haven't been able to get to because we have so much time and effort going into just pulling data out of our system now. So I do think it's something probably in the next couple of months we'll be bringing pricing back for you guys to look at and approve us moving forward in one way or another with that. But just kind of wanted to get that on your radar. It's been a lot of discussion that we've had been going on over the last couple of weeks.
Well, and the one thing about it does have, like, the clinic, the hospital, long-term care, home health, and hospice, so it has everything together, so we don't have to go looking for something else.
Mm-hmm. Which really, you know, as they showed us the system, the medical record flowing through the system, I think would really improve our continuity of care. And I think that's a piece that as a healthcare system that, you know, we talk about being it being easier for people to come here because we have great continuity of care. And we really do with our staff, and I think our staff communicates through patients and concerns very well. But this would give us a better tool of tracking that and having some continuity and consistency, having one med rec for our providers to do, and ensuring that, you know, their medications actually reconcile no matter whether they show up in the emergency room or get admitted to the floor or, you know, are seen in clinic. all of that work would really go in taking some work off of our providers. So.
Does it tie into the cost report and billing at all, or no? Completely.
There's elements that would
each other.
From a cost report standpoint, a lot of that's where we're pulling reports out, and there's a kind of a separate system they report into. But there are advantages to the cost report for, if there's some increased cost to the system, we get to pick, some of that up on the cost report. We can kind of talk through that with our vendor. It's pretty easy with the one line item adjustments to go in and make a quick adjustment on the spreadsheet we do their cost report template on, and just kind of see what would actually have Medicare pick up with if there's increased cost to it. So, we do have maintenance costs for three systems now. So, it'll be kind of a little bit of a process to make sure we're comparing apples to apples with what we're getting, with what we'd be giving up from that standpoint as well.
So. I can just add on quickly. It does include an accounting package. And so all of the financials will be on the Meditech system. In fact, it started out as an accounting package for hospitals. It was the original design back in the 60s. But the cost report is a completely separate process and application. But it would feed pretty well. The only thing that would be different would be the payroll system would likely sit on the ADP workflow that we were now transitioning to, so that would not be in Meditech.
So EHR evolved due to some legislation on a national level, creating a lot of incentives and kind of an urgency that we had to achieve this magical moment of becoming a paperless electronic society. And then the unintended consequence was 100 different vendors jumped into all this federal money, and none of them worked together. It was all our plan, and we got stuck with something that didn't integrate, even though we were told it would, and then you get to live with that since 2008. And so I gave a rather crabby discussion to this presentation about how I'm not happy with just a promise that this all works together. I think we have to have somebody who's already taken the leap of faith and has it, and confirm that yes, it does, before you make this massive switch over. Yeah. Otherwise, it's just another sales pitch, and then you find out later when it's too late, here's what you really get.
We found it. They do have it in Havre, Montana, and they do have the long-term care, the clinic, the hospital, home health, and hospice. So before we'd ever buy it, we'd send some of the people up there to see how it works.
This is a lesson. Important, I guess, but for example, our neighbor to the north spent $15 million, if I'm remembering correctly, to transition to Cerner. Assuming that since Billings has Cerner, they're integrated now. They're on the same system, not even close. But I would imagine that was part of the expectation before they make this massive investment. And their transition was not smooth. There was a lot of struggling, and for that kind of money, you don't really have the patience for that. So I think the market will eventually reach a more user-friendly and more integrated stage where if you want to transfer records from this hospital to that, you don't print it all out, fax it, and then scan it back in. That's worthless. And there may be some advantage to waiting until things evolve to the point that you don't have these stumbling blocks that we're spending all day on right now. So I think there's a need, but I don't know if we have waited long enough for the right product to be available, and that, somebody smarter than me can answer that.
Well, I do. So right now, I think the market's really shifting to three main players in that game. You have Epic, Cerner, and Meditech are really the three biggest players in the whole process. The interoperability piece, and I think that's a good point, and when we go kind of look at a site, I think would be something that would be interesting to kind of see what that looks like. I think what we get from CPSI is it's a system that's essentially was probably built 30 years ago, and the infrastructure is 30 years old, and technology has massively changed from 30 years ago without really seeing any major changes to how they operate as a facility, which is why, you know, 3 years ago, I think they had a, you know, they probably were kind of competing with Meditech for being that, whether or not, or which one was the third biggest player in the game, and that answer has kind of been made. They're not even close to each other anymore. And so my concern is if we, CPSI can't cut it a year from now, and we jump in line with another 250 hospitals, we might take 3 years before we get on a new system, you know, and then we'll be dealing with bugs for how long, you know. You know, I think it's having some reservations with where we've been for the last, you know, 16 years, I think is understandable. But I think it just means we need to make sure we're doing our homework with whatever we go into, you know, so.
So CPSI failing is a pretty big part of the decision now, and you don't feel like it's that far away.
I think there's potential for that to be, you know, they've, so, you know, the hospital I was on in Alliance sat on their advisory council, so I actually went to Mobile twice, which is where CPSI is founded, and, you know, they did a week-long, here's where we're going, and direction of the organization, and from my experience in those settings, I think they made some pretty fatal flaws because they had bought up three new electronic medical record systems and tried to take the best in breed and build the best notes from this system into all three of these other ones. And they eventually were trying to migrate all four of them to be the same platform. And the development time, they were like 2 years behind 3 years into the project. It was just taking way too long for them to do. So they made the change shortly before I came here of sunsetting the other products they had bought and moving everyone over to this product that they had built. But I know they probably lost at least 80% of their market share because people saw what they had and said that's inferior to what we were coming off of and we're not going to go backwards. And so like instantly they dropped a huge chunk. I mean, the annual maintenance fees for these hospitals are $600,000 a year, $700,000 a year, depending on the size of the facility. So you lose 150 hospitals at that price point, and there's a lot of cash flow that just walked out the door. And so I think as a company, you know, they're trying to figure out what the heck do they do, because there's a lot of staff I'm sure they've had to cut and a lot of, you know, issues that they're trying to figure out, which takes them away from being inventive and improving their product. And, you know, they made a flaw that is going to hurt them for the next 10. If they weather the storm, it's still going to hurt them for 10 years.
Well, and we used to hear from them all the time, want to come out and visit, talk to us and everything. I don't think we've heard from them in a year.
Oh, no, they email me like every other week.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
They don't email me anymore.
They probably shouldn't start with this anymore, but, you know, from what I've seen in the 2 years I've been here working with the product, it's very dated. You can hardly get data out of it I'm not doing clinical work in there, but from what I'm trying to get out of it, it's almost impossible to get the data. And what I used to be able to pull in a report in 30 seconds is like a 20-minute process. And so there's just inefficiencies throughout the hospital from having that in the building. So.
Well, it would be good if a fact-finding team goes to Haber and researches their situation and could give us a summary at a meeting.
They did show from that interoperability. So nationally, this medical record exchange has been seen as an issue in the industry for a long time. So there's state organizations I think every state has built as far as trying to get information from one system and one hospital to the next. And so, I don't know, I can't remember what the one of these called.
WIRE. Isn't it called WIRE?
I'm not sure.
Another acronym. Anyway, it's a Wyoming Information
Exchange
server.
There's about two or three national systems that are working with all these, the big EMR players on trying to promote interoperability. And the big one's called, I think, Commonwealth. And so when they were out, they brought a provider that I think he's a hospitalist in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Avera is actually a pretty large health system. When you go over into South Dakota, North Dakota, Minnesota, and I think even within Iowa.
Just starting
to get
to Iowa.
So maybe dipping down into like northeast Nebraska. But they use Meditech in a health system that big that probably has 25 to 30 hospitals in that health system. So I don't think we're in looking at them like we're going for a second-rate product by any sense. But he pulled up notes he was able to pull from a patient from a different hospital by just searching while he was here. He couldn't show it in the live demo, but he was able to show some of the providers. I don't think in the ER one, but maybe with the hospitalist one that didn't attend Dr. Schuler. So there are things progressing, and I think going with somebody who's really in line with where technology is going is going to make that adoption for us much better in the long run. So.
And I sense that was a better fit for a smaller hospital than trying to buy a Cerner or an Epic.
Yeah,
I don't know if there's some
aspects with those products. There's an overall cost associated with it, I think. You're at least looking at probably closer to $3 million to piggyback off a bigger health system. And then there's less control when you piggyback off a larger health system and what you are able to do as far as you yourself as an organization. So.
And the yearly updates.
Yeah.
I helped with was responsible for the implementation of conversion to Epic in a critical access hospital in Estes Park a few years back. Similar size hospital, frankly. We jumped on the platform with UC Health, went to Epic, had to buy a separate accounting package. And it is expensive, but it takes a little while to get used to it. We had to employ a few more staff in the IT department, but that was really important for informatics, sitting at the elbow, also for metrics and analysis reports, things like that. It was very, very good, very helpful. The patient care worked out real well as the medical record transfers to almost anybody now, because many people are on Epic anyway. It's a bit of an event. It's also quite expensive. $3 million would be a number for just to get it implemented, and then you're going to spend hundreds of thousands during the year for maintenance and support. Good product. I've also worked with Meditech at the hospital in Glenwood Springs, Colorado. And that's a good package for a mid-sized hospital to maybe even smaller hospitals like us. Just the sheer cost and the enormity of the number of staff you can employ with going to Cerner or Epic would probably sink us, frankly. Meditech is a good option to go, and they seem to be pushing the envelope with informatics, metrics, analysis, which is what we're really looking for, which is what we're not getting out of CPSI, is any sort of analysis. And that is definitely available in Meditech. And if we can afford it, I would encourage you to consider CPSI is just not going to be around long.
Thanks for that insight. Well, we're not going to solve this one tonight.
No.
Maybe
could go to Glenwood Springs instead of Happen.
yeah, that would be a place to go.
The next thing, I just want to touch base, and we brought up a little earlier, but we had a great turnout for the breast cancer awareness event that we did, not just here, but we did it down in KC for the first time, and I think we scheduled 9 mammos out of KC this year. So was definitely well worth the event and going down. I think we already, I was told, I don't have an exact number, but there were several, findings and pushing people for increased screening from, the exams that they did do. And so a great event. I've heard almost every year we get at least one breast cancer diagnosis out of this. And so have a great team. There's a lot of people that were really excited for it and had a great turnout from our staff and the community. This is the first year we've ever had a speaker for it. I heard a lot of really positive feedback from, her coming and sharing her story. So definitely kudos to the team that helped with that. There is a handful of them, or more, I guess. Probably almost 20 people that showed up to help with that event, whether it's planning on the front end or supporting it that evening, so which is great. Dale last week finished his second month of the leadership development program he's doing. I'm really excited for what he's doing and just helping grow the leaders throughout our facility. I've heard a lot of positive feedback as far as just giving tools and tricks to having difficult conversations and how you do some of these things. And so I'm really excited as that program progresses and kind of the results that will be for the organization. And then the last thing I wanted to bring up for this is just the board education stuff. And I don't think anyone was actually able to attend the training yesterday. Did you go? How was it?
It was okay.
Yeah.
In fact, I have some questions, which we can talk about later. But No, it wasn't bad.
Okay. Sounds good. I'm like
there's 400 and some people on that darn thing, from all over the state, from county agencies, from all different kinds of public entities. So
good. Yeah, I looked online. There's a couple, places that had approved training programs or whatever. They were all different associations for different public boards, and so I'll try to get an answer for when the hospital association is going to have their trustee event this year, because I know that's kind of what they're shooting for, is having a certified training program through there. Rich, I think you're probably going to be good, but I'll try to get clarification otherwise, Pearson. So on that, but yeah, it's kind of an interesting, I guess this has been on the books for a long time and no one's ever put accountability to it, so now we have to kind of go through the hurdles to it. So I still have not seen the legal opinion that said only the board chair or treasurer have to attend. Have you seen anything on that, Dr. Schuller? I know you had kind of maybe written to my thought that might be the case.
Well, remembering an email that attributed that those officers only to the Wyoming Hospital Association, but I asked someone at the state auditor's office in person on the phone who said all board members. So not everyone has the same opinion, is my current understanding.
Yeah, they created a flow chart, whether that's been in place for a long time or they did it according to this, but essentially it was if you're on a board, you have to attend.
It was kind of a busy algorithm that wasn't all that clear or helpful from my perspective.
Yeah, I think they tried to make that confusing on purpose, because I don't think it had to be as confusing as it was. So. And that's all I have for this part.
Yeah, I was going to ask earlier, and I forgot. It was in the leadership reports on the hospice facility over here. It sounds like we're okay. occupancy, we've been given a certificate potentially?
Or? Yeah. So the big thing we're dealing with now is whether or not the state is going to make us do a change of address for over there, which creates a little bit of a headache with CMS. So we're trying to walk through that process now. I had a call with them last week, and we'll get a letter submitted to them tomorrow for them to make a final decision. But when we hear back from them, we'll know one way or another. Otherwise, it's just kind of a paperwork deal to get it moved over. But with us providing a lot of services here and billing, it's kind of an annexed office. I had some concerns because it's not really being zoned for, like, patient care. And so whether or not the fire marshal would actually have concerns if that became the permanent address for that service. So trying to muddle through the bureaucracy, I guess, and the red tape right now. So
well, we're down to item 6, which is the financial report. And do we dim the lights anymore, or do we use that big screen?
I don't think we really have to,
but I don't have anything to present on the screen.
Okay, so we'll leave the lights on.
Yeah. That'd be great for the light. Otherwise, I won't be able to see you.
Okay.
I hope this is okay, and I'm certainly open to comments about how you would like the presentation to go. Historically, in my career anyway, I've generally provided a narrative and then the financial statements, and then we'd have a discussion. And so I'm open to comments. But that said, I would just like to just briefly review that for the month of September, our gain or loss is $63,000. We're under budget. And for year to date, we are also under budget. And then compared to prior year, we're doing quite well. The revenues for the month were $3.4 million, and we had a budget of $3.1 million. Year to date, we are $10 million compared to a budget of 9.6, and then prior year was 2.7. So the point is that business is up and revenues are up. Collections are working pretty well. The business office is working hard. It is really a challenge these days. I've not ever seen it this hard to try to get paid. Medicare pays. You know, the old line, Medicare doesn't pay well, but it does pay timely, unless it's an advantage program package, in which case they pay, but then they take it back, and then we have to argue with them, and then they pay us, and they take it back again, and we have to argue with them. And it makes us look like idiots to the patients. Some of the insurance companies just gaming the system. So all of that to say, honestly, our contractual adjustments are running about 34-35% write-offs of our revenues, which is really very, very good, especially for the amount of Medicare and Medicaid that we have. So I would say that I don't see any sort of storm clouds on the horizon in the world of managing our business. It's just as a frustrating world as we're billing and collecting our accounts. Expenses are also under budget, which is really great news. And for the month of September, it's $2.3 million and $7.2 for the year to date. So compared to budget and compared to prior year, we still are doing quite well. That seems to be good. Year-to-date non-operating revenue is somewhat consistent with budget, but it's significantly ahead of prior year. A lot of that had to do with the grants and the monies that were spent towards the construction project. Came in and reported last year. Cash flow is consistent. As Luke had noted earlier, our days cash on hand are down. We're down around 52 right now. The number that I, as a CFO, am comfortable with is 90 or better, just in case of a rainy day fund. You know, you like to keep money available, and so we'll continue to work on that process. And then finally, just the enclosed stats are intended to just represent a different look from what you've seen. I'm still missing some things. I can't find them yet. I'm still sort of coming out of the age of discovery after my third month here. And so If I missed ads. So we have to get to the... So I'm not going to bore you by reading through all of this. I'll leave it to you to interpret that. What I'm trying to provide is for each of the months in the fiscal year total, and then compared to prior year. As you can see, I'm still looking for numbers from prior year, and to fit in with this. I think in the past you were provided with basically total radiology visits. I broke it down between diagnostics, CT, MRI, ultrasound, etc. And in rehab, I broke it out between physical and occupational and speech therapies. So we'll continue to do that, and we can track those numbers as they go. We'll see how we do. Home health visits and lab tests are in there. Emergency department's visits and admits. And then, of course, the inpatient visits. And we do break out the Medicare from the other because the provider-based is definitely a big impact to us. So if I... if it's confusing or if there's some different way that you'd like to see it, I'm certainly open to that. But otherwise, I'd like to hope to continue to provide it this way. I think it provides a sort of a clear picture of what's happening.
Well, it totally does. In fact, that was one of my questions, like in the physical therapy and occupational therapy stats. Mm-hmm. Is there some like seasonality to those departments or something? Because wow, I mean, way off, you know, in September versus summertime, and maybe that's just part of the course. Or
well, that number is interesting to me too, and we might have to dig into that because their revenue is drastically up. I think they're up another 30% from where they were last year, and so the so we might not be comparing apples to apples for those stats numbers.
It's still a bit of a challenge to capture that. They want to work off of some RVU numbers, which is fine, but I think we're all used to seeing just the number of visits. And so, yeah, we still have a little bit of work to do to clarify this document.
I like it. I mean, when it gets cleaned up, it'll tell us a lot, I think.
I think it will, yeah. Especially as we roll through the year, and we'll be able to see the seasonality. It'll just show right up.
Yeah. Yeah. You misspelled Amy on Amy Holt.
Did I really?
A-M-I-E.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
That's all I can contribute to financial statements.
And I do know that. I'm going to blame it on the computer. It auto corrected me.
Probably.
With that said, there's a couple of the things that are happening currently. We're currently in the middle of our audit, so that's sort of keeping my feet moving. Audit and then cost report is due at the end of November. So I think I've already said everything else I wanted to say.
Do you know what the non-operating grant that was budgeted that hasn't arrived yet? It's $230,000, and I can't imagine what that is.
That's the ARPA grant, the $1.6 million we were talking about in the foundation meeting. So I think that just got divided over the...
That's a portion of it then.
Portion of it.
Expected by now.
Yeah.
Tim, you were going to do some work with the accounts receivable. Have you dove into that yet?
Yeah, we have. We've been spending quite a bit of time on the AR. There was some work done principally by our cost report guy, Mark Lyons, who I think is doing great work. There was a lot of bad debts, I may have said this last month, not only in the hospital but then also on the clinic side, that had been written off to bad debt years and years ago but were never taken off of our books. And so it was sort of fouling what the balance sheet looks like. And Mark went through and has identified all that. And so we're in the process of cleaning that up still. I think we've mostly got the hospital's write-offs off our books. We had already had that reserved. it's not impacting our bottom line, but it's just a balance sheet item. And the clinic work still needs to be done. And it's like $1 million or $2 million that needs to be taken off the books. We have an allowance to make sure that doesn't hit the P&L. So we're still working on that. We are still working on in the AR. You know, it's pretty good, but there are some issues with. Really, it's about the Medicare supplemental plans are sort of impacting and drawing our AR out into over 90 days and things like that. But I'm working closely with the PFS department with April and her team as we're sort of working in the area of our charge master and our processes and our posting and our getting the claims out the door faster than they were before, stuff like that. Yep.
Great, thanks.
You bet.
So I feel really good looking at professional fees being $120,000 under budget for the month. Does that mean we're getting some relief from a lot of traveler expense? Is that expected, or is that a month anomaly?
That could be related to maybe some delayed.
And it's less than half of what we expected to spend for the period, and that's great, but I'm trying to, that's one thing that I think about a lot is how much we have to bring in outside help and the expense that goes with it.
Yeah, but on the year-to-date side, you know, we're still pretty, for the month, we probably had caught up with some invoices, but the year-to-date numbers is pretty high, is it not?
Yeah. For
professional fees, yeah.
Okay. I think one shift there from where we've been historically is the Inspire with Therapy used to be in the salary line, and now they fall down under there. And so they make up a majority of that cost. But if we look at, like, the revenue, and we just had a semi-annual review with them yesterday, actually, their volume is about double what it was prior to them getting. So we have some increased cost with that, but it's a fraction of the increased revenue we're bringing in. And that increased expense is cost reportable, so we should be getting some of that actually back on the cost report as well. So for this year, because our travelers in the nursing home have really been down quite a bit, that a lot of that comes to do with not necessarily the nursing home, but lab and CFO and Inspire and some of those other department positions across the departments.
So being under budget on salaries, is that partly due to Inspire taking some of our salary overhead?
No, because you'd have to look back a couple of years because they went on their books before last fiscal year.
So they're
so
in
even
the
prior
salaries.
Year, yeah, even prior year wouldn't show Inspire in the salary line.
Okay. Well, all in all, it's pretty good news from the financial.
So far, yeah, I think it looks good.
Any other questions for Tim on the finances?
As far as the county mill levy is concerned, and I think I asked this last month, mm-hmm. but I mean, that should be dialed in, shouldn't it? I mean, here it is, and this is how much we're going to get. So maybe it's just a timing thing or something?
Well, so, you know, Luke and I talked this over as well. Historically, what Becky did and before is they booked the number in July in a prepaid account, and then they just divided it by 12 sure. and booked that. I'm more of a gotta see it to believe it guy. And so as the money comes in, that's when I book it. So it's not going to show as evenly as it did before. It's going to show because between now and the next few months, we'll be getting higher checks, and it'll pop up. But it's going to be different, just based on when the checks come in. And you know, we do get it. We picked it up last week. for the current month.
And that parallels what we see in the rural health care district for the ambulance, too. It's just not here yet.
When the county gets it collected for that month, you know, then that's when they turn it back to us. So, I mean, we could, if the board felt more comfortable with just a flat number, I'm happy to do that, but I thought this was...
Well, but the fact that we're like year to date under by 100 and whatever that math is, 7,000.
Yeah.
But the budget on the mill levy, I mean, we're really right on, aren't we?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. It's basically $1,000,080, I think, is our annual number. So that's what we would expect to see at the end of the year. Yeah, there's a couple of interesting things going on that's sort of new to me. Well, actually, maybe not. The state of Wyoming's got a program for, a lot of it is for the skilled nursing facility, or Amy Holt bill. So we get, they send me a bill for $80,000 to participate in the Medicaid program, and then the next month I get a check back. It's double that. So there's a couple of programs. That's a way legally for the state to help fund our program. And so those funds sort of come in sporadically as well. And so I'm pleasantly surprised to see numbers of funds coming in from a lot of varying places. It pops into some of the operating and then the non-operating revenues. So that's always kind of fun to watch those checks show up.
Yeah, it seems the 340B program is just pretty important to us as well. You know, those numbers always blow me away. And it seems to me in last legislative session they were trying to take some of that away from us. I don't know if that was at the state level or the federal level.
Yeah, at the Fed level, that's been a deal for about, I don't know, since the program went into effect.
The pharmaceutical companies hate it.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's much just cash out their pocket.
Yeah.
But in many hospitals I know, that is their bottom line. Is what the 340B money provides.
Yeah.
So,
it's about $900,000 a year.
Yes,
it's very meaningful for the work we do. So, and how we can invest back in the facility.
So, who has the stronger lobby in Washington? Is it the hospital associations or is it the pharmaceutical?
It's pharmaceutical, absolutely. Right. We all know, and insurance.
Guess we'll find out.
Yeah, and insurance too. Yeah. I don't have anything else.
Thank you. Our next item is approval of credentialing, and it's a fairly detailed roster. We have some reappointment staffing for Dr. Hine in dentistry, and it's Aubrey tab. Rather than Audrey.
Oh, keep doing that.
And then we have three of our family medicine providers and two PAs and a CRNA who are all current staff members.
They're still processing.
So pay no attention to line item 5. That'll be coming next month. It's confusing what would be the reason for temporary privileges for someone who's on staff, line item 7.
Her privileges expired October 1st, and she just hasn't finished her package yet.
Oh.
We're going through the HSC program, and it's been a bit of a tough deal, but I expect to have it done by next month.
Okay. So she's still able to work.
Yes.
So these have been reviewed by administration and medical staff in charge of credentialing and approved by the medical staff as a whole. And we would entertain a motion to approve up for reappointment unless there's any question or discussion.
So moved.
Thank you.
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Credentials are approved. The moment you've all been waiting for, discussion of mission and vision statements.
Yeah, did everyone get this in their packets?
Yeah.
So Camden came back and met with Dale and I a couple of weeks ago, trying to just fine-tune and do the final tweaks for mission and vision. They, as a team, kind of got together and brainstormed based on the discussion and the notes that she took from when we met with the board, probably 6 weeks ago, something like that now. And so came back with some kind of great ideas and some different tweaks and concepts to it. So we kind of ironed it down to a new proposed mission statement as excellence in healthcare delivered with compassion. And then for the vision statement, dedicated to being your partner of choice for healthcare and wellness. Over the last couple weeks, after we kind of got these back and had met with her, I really like them. I feel like they do a great job of kind of spurring us to action and to even accountability for how we operate as an organization, that we're not just happy showing up on a day-to-day basis, but we're really, trying and living on our mission. We have to show up with purpose, and I think that's something that a mission statement should cause us to be the best version of ourselves, and I think that was one of the goals I had going into this, and with the feedback we got from the board in that session and thought it did a great job of that. But do you guys have any feedback? And I don't know if you had a chance to review that before coming, or
I think it's in line with what we talked about. It's very efficient, not a real wordy thing. I wonder what nursing and medical staff feedback you've gotten.
Yeah, I shared it with the medical staff, but our meeting ran long, so we weren't able to have a lot of discussion with that group. And then the next two meetings we've had have also been had full agendas, haven't been able to get a lot of feedback from them on that either. So.
And it sounded like the next step is to use the staff and then and the same consulting agency to come up with the values, is that right?
Yeah. So once we kind of approve the mission and vision, we're already working on getting some dates set. I think it can come back out to do some focus groups with staff to look at the values. Yep. So it's kind of the game plan. And are hoping by the first part of next year that we'll have all of that ironed out.
I can't remember exactly the verbiage that we were at, but this seems like pretty close to what it was, didn't it?
Yeah.
I thought it was a good morning, good exercise myself. She did a good job, I thought, pulling us together and getting it out of us. So.
Yeah, I thought that was a great exercise, I think, for us all to get together. It was great to have her here, I think, to kind of spearhead and keep it on track and things out of
those. Well, I have a question for Anna. You've worked at a number of healthcare related facilities, and is this something that's emphasized fairly strongly in employee?
Yeah, my last organization, I worked for Providence Health and Services, which spans 13 states, and I think historically they pride themselves on exactly what Luke was saying in orientation and onboarding, is bringing their new employees very close, making them feel extremely valued and connecting them to the organization using mission, vision, and values. And then they thread it into every single meeting, every single initiative that the organization is coming through. And I think Luke knows this, but when I was prepping for my interview on site a month ago, I was doing research on the website for the mission and vision and values for Johnson County. And it's not very awe-inspiring in current state. It doesn't, like you said, spur new staff forward. It's hard to find something to connect with current state. So I think if we're looking to attract high-quality talent and bring people to us that are going to stay for a really long time, there needs to be something to hold on to that's more than just the physical space. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's good. I mean, I think for many who are very familiar with this organization, it's almost kind of unfamiliar. It's like, we don't talk about this because we all know each other and we kind of see, we see what...
That's what I'm saying.
Eloquently.
Trying. So I think for some, it's sort of like, well, why are we redefining who we are? But I see it's a much different perspective for someone coming to the organization and trying to figure out, what do you stand for? So we have to be willing to change.
Yeah, I mean, if I was looking for another job, I mean, I would have had no idea to look for me. I mean, I knew I have our mission in my office, but I would never look at anybody else's mission or vision or their values if I went somewhere else.
And I wasn't able to come to this meeting, and I thought our old ones were just fine, but when I compared them, I thought, our old ones just like, we're going to do the minimum for you because we have to. I mean, that's because there was no excitement in it, like, yeah. I feel like there is.
Adequate health care.
Yeah.
We're okay. Come yeah. on down.
We're here for you.
Yeah.
I think it's a good element of employee retention to involve people and pull everybody together to try to come up with something like this. It really brings ownership.
So you did a great job.
Mm-hmm. I also think, like, as we're talking through changes we need to make as an organization, our old one didn't really, it was hard to use that as a way of, I know this is going to be a hard change, but it's what's best for the patient. Our mission statement almost negated spurring people to take those steps, mm-hmm. where I feel like this is something in those discussions we can say, I know this is going to be a change, and I know it's going to be hard, but this is the mission that we're trying to live out. And I think, you know, in those discussions and conversations, it's something that we can utilize actually as a tool. And I think that's what our mission statement should have the ability to do for us, is actually help with, should we do this or not? And I think this one does, and I don't necessarily think our old one, if you use it in that way, would necessarily cause you to make the right decision. We also, so my first 2 months after I started, they had the Wyoming Hospital Association, and this, one of the sessions I attended, they looked at every hospital in the state, and there was one that they couldn't find a vision and values statement on, and I know which one that was, because that was definitely us. So I think, you know, there's aspects that is just standard practice and holding from an accountability standpoint to who, you know, who we are, who we want to be, and you know, we have lots of people that have been here for a very long time. So I think when we retain people, we do a great job of that. But we also have people that don't make it 6 months, you know. And so how can we catch those people and build the culture that we want that causes people to get past that first 6 months and then stay for the next 20 years? You know, that's kind of where I think this plays a role.
20 years, that's nothing.
I also think with the work we're going to do with Brian Lee and that, you know, Ignite the Patient Experience stuff, you know, I think this really kind of pairs well with kind of the initiatives we're looking at bringing out in 2024. So.
Well, I'm assuming this would be something the board would vote on approving. If that's their desire to do so.
So you made a motion to that effect?
I haven't heard any negative comments.
No, I think coming out of that deal, it wasn't just the board, it was the management, and we came up with that. Well, I think everyone was kind of pleased after the fact.
Yeah. We've talked about it with like our senior leadership team here as an organization a couple times.
It's a good meeting. That's really good.
Mm-hmm. But I do think it would be good for this to be an item that you guys can vote on.
I'd make that motion to approve the proposed mission statement and vision statement.
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded. Those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Was that an aye or a comment?
It was an aye.
Okay. We had a little technical issue. The motion passes.
Thank you. Very good.
Excellent.